At a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our May 22nd, 2024 edition. I'm Justin Klein, and here today, once again, is Luke on NVIDIA Day. Is that what we should call it? Should we name this National NVIDIA Day?
You can call it NVIDIA Day. You can call it Fed Meeting Minutes Day. Either way, pretty big day.
Both were market movers. Well, I guess we'll find out in the morning. NVIDIA did have earnings after hours, and we'll dig into that. But this show is not just about NVIDIA or the Fed Minutes. It's really about you and your financial journey. And hopefully investing is part of that journey. And we're to help you navigate the complexities of the investment game, investment world. And we do this by answering your finance and investment questions, as well as bringing you relevant topics and data that is important to you so that you can make better decisions with your money, avoid the pitfalls, and capitalize on the numerous opportunities that are out there. I still hear people saying, oh, market's overvalued, but there are plenty of great opportunities in today's markets. So that's what this show is about, and Luke and I will run down the market performance here in a little bit, as well as run down the show topics that we plan to hit on throughout the hour. But first, we are going to tackle our first caller question now.
Hi, Justin and Luke. I'm calling about Lululemon Company. It has dropped to my fair value price. I'm wondering if this is a good time to get in or if it's a falling knife. I'm not sure why it has been dropping so much lately. Just wondering what your thoughts are on the company and if I should wait or find another company or buy at the moment. Thank you.
Well, Lulu is certainly down a healthy chunk from its 52-week high. And what it looks like to me, Luke, is the growth is slowing. Remember, they made only up $5 per share pre-pandemic, well, actually in 2020. 2019, they made $3.84. Last year, they made $12.77, supposed to make 14-plus this year, 15-plus next year. That's a lot of expectations that are being built into that were being built into the stock, and that looks like it's coming unwound to a major degree. Is it undervalued quite yet? I guess I'll let Luke speak to that, and then I'll look at the chart after that.
Well, I think exactly what you said when we came out, Lululemon is correct. So back in 2019, they had about $3.2 billion, about 10 or $9.6 billion last year, supposed to have $10.7 billion today, which on its face sounds great. That's an annualized growth rate of about 24%. But growth has really slowed over the past 2 years, so about 20% combined over the past 2 years. And so even at that, they're trading at a forward-looking price to earnings of about 22, which is kind of expensive. It's slightly over where the market as a whole has been trading for quite some time. Their cash flow looks to be improving. Their profitability is pretty stable. But I think overall, it's just a story where 5, 6, 7 years ago, Lululemon was the only game in town that made the aesthetically pleasing athletic wear. And then you have a bunch of new companies coming in and they're eating away at Lululemon's market share, and you see that over the past couple years. Is it overly expensive? I wouldn't say it's overly expensive, but it is pretty expensive if you take into consideration that their growth is slowing pretty quickly. So what do you see on the technical front?
Well, let me get to that in a second, but I want to talk a little bit more about what you just said, which is, you know, they were the only game in town, and now they are no longer, right? Athleta is one that is backed by, I think, Khloe Kardashian is one of the brand ambassadors there. That's owned by Gap, and, you know, Gap is, that's in an uptrend, although that one looks to be rolling over as well. And then you have Aloe, that's gotten a lot of traction as well. And so that's what I think is hurting Lululemon the most. If you look at, let me look at the chart here. I'm just running. Yeah, so their next support is down around 275 or so, and now it's at 300. So you're not far from it, only about 10%. I'd probably wait until then. I do think it is getting to a reasonable valuation, however, but I want to see where earnings kind of level out at, because, you know, we know that the higher interest rates have affected those, the lower income spectrum. But you're already starting to see those kind of middle class brands and stores start to feel the pinch as well. So that lag effect of monetary policy is starting to hit. And therefore, you know, Lululemon is kind of in the crosshairs of that. So definitely a name I would continue to keep on my watch list, because I think they still are the best in breed, even though they may be losing a bit of market share to those other entrants. I would probably be a bit patient until I get a technical turnaround. And the first sign of that probably won't come until 275 or so.
I will add on one thing that does look good for them is that about 45% of the revenue comes from e-commerce. So they're pretty well positioned to be able to handle where it seems that commerce has been flowing. 46 from in-stores, 45 in e-commerce. So I do agree it's a good name to keep on your watch list, but yeah, not right now.
Exactly. Thanks for the call. Now, we are heading into a short break, and on the other side, we'll talk about today's planned topics, as well as the market performance for today. And remember, you can call anytime and leave your question on the InvestTalk Voice Bank, or if you're listening via our live stream or on AM 1220 radio in the Silicon Valley area, you can call right now at 888-99-CHART.
When listener questions are played on the InvestTalk podcast,
how do you guys determine a value stock?
The caller voices are amplified many thousands of times.
Just wanted to get your opinion on JP Morgan and BAC.
How do you see this looking forward?
I'm 25 years old and have a question about retirement funds.
And the unbiased answers from Justin Klein.
That's why it's trading so cheap, because there's a lot of regulatory risk here.
And Steve Peasley.
I kind of like it here. If I was going to buy Tyson Foods, this is where I'd buy it.
Benefit the entire InvestTalk community.
Thank you for what you guys do.
That's why 24/7, rain or shine, no matter how simple or how complex, your questions make a difference.
Symbol BKE, what's your outlook?
And InvestTalk is made better by the power of you. So don't forget to call 888-99-CHART. Got two for the price of one. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are here, and they're taking your finance and investment questions now. 888-99-CHART.
Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes, and our main focus point is about how investors are their own worst enemies, and we're going to look at some numbers to back that up. Simply, that most people, they buy high and they sell low. I mean, they chase returns, and then when things get a little rough, they tend to jump for the exits. And there's some data to back that up, especially for 2023. So we're going to look at that story. In addition, we have some other topics. One is home sales. Home sales came out today, and I think there was some surprise, and we'll dig into those numbers. Also, the CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, is starting to treat buy now, pay later companies like Affirm, Klarna, Afterpay, etc., much like the credit card companies. And we'll talk about whether that's a good thing and what that might mean for the industry. And then lastly, we have, what was the other one was about
metals.
The positioning in metals. That's what it was, positioning in metals. So we're going to dig into that story if we have time. We also have Voice Bank questions in regards to Delaware Statutory Trust, as well as Salesforce CRM, and then questions submitted via the comment section in the InvestTalk YouTube channel. Now, of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions now at 888-99-CHART. Now, you probably noticed that we are, once again, answering questions submitted via YouTube. And let's head to one now. Audrey says, I own a small portion of InMode, INMD, in my portfolio. I bought over 2 years ago and I consider buying more to lower my average cost, but wanted to get your opinion on the stock. Luke, what do you see about InMode?
Well, InMode, INMD, designs, develop, manufacture, and markets minimally invasive aesthetic medical products. So sounds like it is probably a relatively expensive business, but they only have about $6 million in debt on a $1.6 billion market cap company. Their cash flow looks like it has improved over the past 3 years, though their profitability has fallen pretty precipitously. And you see in October, really starting in July of last year, you had a steep fall off in the price of the stock from 45 down to about 18, 19, where it is today. What are you seeing from your end?
Well, I know this well, and you know this, Luke, my fiance. She is a dermatologist, and I've asked her about this company. And this is a name that got a big boost. I think it was around the pandemic when Kim Kardashian posted one of their products called Morpheus 8. Well, as you know, Luke, my fiance, she's one of the top dermatologists in the country, and she knows these products in and out, and she knows Morpheus 8 doesn't work very well. So I think this is a flash in the pan, and it got a lot of hype because of Kim, and ever since that hype, it's been steadily deflating. Let's just say that. And that's why the stock continues to deflate. Back in July of last year, it was trading around $45 per share. Now we're at 19 and change, and that's off its 52-week low, around $16 and change. So I'm not a big fan of it because based on the expertise around me, it doesn't really have the products to compete in the market. And so the profitability trends are negative. The stock chart is negative, and I would pass on it. But maybe I'm biased. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I would never question Steph when it comes to the dermatological environment. I will say there's also about 8% short interest out there right now, so the market still thinks this has some room to run downwards. I mean, it's all about profitability for me. When you see a drop-off of about 50% in terms of where its margins are in 2 years, that seems to me like a warning about the longevity of the company and the ability of the company to continue to return capital to investors in any way or have any price appreciation at all. So, yeah. You know, when you have these companies that are seemingly built on hype, it's best to stay away.
Yeah, earnings are supposed to be down 27% this year. Now, Luke, let's take a look at the market today. It was a decidedly negative day overall, mainly driven by the Fed minutes that came out that seemed to hint a bit, there might be a rate hike in our future. What did you see from that report?
Yeah, well, that's pretty accurate. The S&P 500 was pretty flat for most of the day, dropped, I think, as low as 70 basis points in the red and settled at about down 27 basis points. I will note about the Fed meeting minutes that came out. It was based upon data through May 1st, I believe, right? So this is lagged given the CPI and PPI data that came in mid-May and subsequent data as a result of that, which shows the economy slowing further. So take that with a grain of salt. I think there was also some positioning associated with NVIDIA earnings at the close. I believe it was up over 1,000 last time I checked in terms of its price, up over 5% in aftermarket hours. So it'll be interesting to see how that carries over into tomorrow.
Yeah, currently after hours, it's a little over $1,000 per share. It closed the day around $950. So, you know, not a huge move, but definitely decent. Less than the market was pricing in. The market was pricing in about a 10% move one way or the other. So we're getting about half that. We also know that it's tends to be thinly traded market after hours, and it could very easily end down tomorrow. So we will see what the follow through is. But overall, a modestly negative day in markets. But
now it's flat.
Now it's flat. There we go. All right. Well, we're going to head to a break. And going into that break, I want to remind you that the KAPP Financial Invest Talk Wealth webinar, hosted by myself and Luke, is coming up June 11th from 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific time. The title is Quality Investing Digging Deeper Than Dividends. And this is going to be very important for all those out there looking to be dividend investors. Because as I've said dozens and dozens, hundreds of times, dividend investing is not just about the dividend. It's about the quality of the business behind it. And that's why we're going to dig into that a little deeper. But it's free, and you must register over on investtalk.com. But give me a call now at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, our main focus point today is very simple, that investors are still their own worst enemies. And this is based on a report by Dalbar, and they look at not just fund performance, but the actual performance that the investors get. Because we know that the total returns that the aggregate investor will get will depend on how much money is in at certain times. And basically over the last 30 years, the S&P 500 has returned 10.15%. But the average equity fund investor has only captured 8.01% of that return. So lagging the overall index by over 2% per year. And Luke, 2% doesn't sound like a lot, but when you do it for 30 years, that is a gigantic number. It's a difference of if you invested $100,000 at the beginning of that 30 years, the average investor would have about $1 million, a little over $1,009,000. If you were just to invest in the S&P 500 and make the entire 10.15% for that entire period, you'd have $1.817 million. So over $800,000 difference. That's a pretty dramatic amount when you're thinking about what you can spend in retirement. So, you know, it's all about, you know, we always say it's time in the market, not timing the market. It's very difficult to time the market. Now, what you're in also matters as well. But what do you think this tells us about the average behavior of the average investor?
Well, I think something comes to mind that one of my old coworkers, who I believe is head of systematic investing at State Street now, said. And he liked to say the best trade is no trade. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes that's correct. Because when you take a look at how investors tend to react when volatility comes back, they get very scared very easily. And sometimes you make a bad trade and it gets away from you. I like to point to in 2009, where I think around 80% of the recovery happened in about 2 months. And if you weren't invested in those 2 months, guess what? You missed out. So a lot of investing has to do with, like you said, time in the market. And the longer your time horizon, the more likely you are to stomach that volatility. And I think that's one of the reasons that it's so helpful to have a financial advisor and work with financial professionals, is because their job is essentially nothing more than to hold your hand, because you have these goals that you set. And those goals are the same, regardless of the daily, weekly, monthly market activity. And so having somebody that can tell you that these are your goals, we should stick to these goals, don't get scared, these things come and pass. I think in a webinar one time, you and I showed the drawdowns of the S&P 500, how long those tended to last. And guess what? Still heads back in the right direction eventually. And if you can stomach that, you're going to have a better investment experience. But I think having somebody that can help you along that path, because it is incredibly hard, is probably one of the things that is most beneficial for most investors.
And to me, there's always two principles to fall back on when you're looking at whether or not you should sell. Okay. And number one is you have to understand the type of environment, economic environment, that creates a major drawdown in equities, And typically, it's a credit market event caused by a deflationary bust. That was what 08 was. When you're in an inflationary environment, as long as it's not runaway inflation, you know, high single digits into the teens, that becomes a problem. That's when the Fed gets too hawkish, dries up liquidity. That becomes an issue. Kind of got a sprinkle of that in 2022. But a major protracted drawdown is only happens when there are widespread defaults and therefore equity values go down dramatically because markets are more worried about defaults than they are upside of earnings. In an inflationary world, which you're in today, earnings just tend to go up because prices in the economy tend to go up. So that's number one, is you have to understand what type of environment you're in. And then also the gap between the returns of equities versus the return on cash. And that's what most people are putting their money in. If you're selling equities, you're buying cash or cash-like instruments. And sometimes that gap is pretty minimal in expected return going forward. But those instances are very rare. There are only a few times that happened. The most egregious was 2000 and 1929, when valuations were way overboard. And that's when cash had a higher expected return than the actual equities. So I looked at that number of the S&P returning 10% per year over 30 years. Let's say the market's 10% overvalued. Okay, let's say that that means the forward-looking expected return, I'm using round numbers here, it doesn't work out exactly like this, but it's, say, 9% going forward. That's still much better than cash. Okay, let's say market's 20% overvalued. Well, that's maybe 8% going forward. That's still much better than cash. So the market has to be egregiously overvalued in order to make running to cash and staying there for an extended period of time worthwhile. And then just looking at these numbers, this is from Dalbar. Last year was another year where both equity and bond investors, they underperformed. The average equity investor earned 5.5% less than the S&P 500 in 2023. And that's after 2022, when the S&P was down 18.1%, and the average investor was down 21%. So it's not even like they do better in down markets. They don't. They still do worse than the broader market. So interesting numbers, and we're heading into a break. But I'm ready to take your calls now at 888-99-CHART.
Let's say you've been thinking about learning a new language. Okay, why? I mean, how would it come in handy? And where would you want to use it? Could it be that you have an upcoming international trip? Or maybe you want to connect with family members or friends from a different culture? I think you should know about Rosetta Stone. With millions of users, it's been the world's most trusted language learning program for 30 years. Rosetta Stone is available on your desktop or as an app with audio companion and the ability to download lessons offline. Rosetta Stone truly immerses you in the language you want to learn. It has a built-in, patented speech recognition engine called True Accent. So as you practice speaking, you'll get feedback on how well you pronounce words. With Rosetta Stone, you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. It's an intuitive process designed for long-term retention. You really learn to speak, listen, and think in your new language. Rosetta Stone is an amazing value, so your special skill set is within easy reach. You know you want to do this, so don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, InvestTalk listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off now at rosettastone.com/today. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It is official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Everybody wants a secure financial future. That means you'll have finance and investment questions. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
On the next InvestTalk, we will look into this topic, understanding the cost of capital, a reality check on high-flying stock returns. Is it better to set reasonable long-term expectations and then track progress towards your goals? So we'll look at that story tomorrow, but for now, let's keep things moving and pivot back to the InvestTalk Voice Bank. This one came in earlier from a listener in Minnesota.
Hi, good day, Justin and Luke. Longtime listener and caller here from the Midwest area. Love the show. Thank you guys for all you do and take the time to educate us with. I have a quick question. I'm looking for a good mid-cap ETF or so to invest in and hold for a good period of time here. I'm looking at ONEV, and I'm also looking at MDY. Do either of those look good? Do they hold a good group of mid-cap stocks that would contain some growth and possibly dividend growth in the future? I'm just curious to get your thoughts and insight on those two funds and what you think of them. Thank you very much for your help. Best wishes to Steve always. Have a good day.
All right. Looking at MDY and then ONEV. Those are the symbols. I know MDY, that one, that's kind of my proxy for mid-caps. That's the S&P 400 mid-cap ETF. So that's just an index fund. Whereas ONEV is a Russell 1000, so a different set of companies. And it has a low vol focus, it looks like. So it's more of a mid-cap value ETF. Usually when you see low vol, you're getting more of a value-type fund. What are you seeing in their differences, Luke?
Well, the Russell 1000 fund is going to be predominantly large caps. It's about 63% large caps because it's going to be the 1,000 largest names within the U.S. and then sorted on some sort of volatility factor here. It looks like they look at value, quality, and size and focus primarily, on low volatility. From a sector perspective, it looks like industrials, 15%. We like that. 13% financials, which is market weight and pretty underweight technology, about 10% within the technology space. Again, all U.S. companies. Most of the revenue derived from the U.S., about 469 total holdings. The top 10% only holds about 10% of the weight. So it's pretty well and broadly diversified there across the spectrum. What do you see in the 400 mid-cap ETF?
Are you sure you weren't looking at the 400 mid-cap ETF? That's because I'm looking at those weights.
I'm looking at ONEV, Russell 1000 Low Volatility Focus ETF.
Okay. Well, I'm looking at MDY. That's going to be a little smaller cap. Like you said, the Russell 1000 is the 1,000 largest, which gives you some large exposure, but a lot of mid-cap exposure as well, not a lot of small. So you're getting, like, the MDY, that'd be
considered, I would say, SMID, right? SMID cap, small mid cap. Whereas the ONEV is going to be more large mid, shall we say, but leaning a little more value there. So I like the fact that there's a little more value focused on that ONEV. This one's tough, but what I like about the MDY is it has about 21% in industrials, only 12% in technology, 15% financial services, base materials 5%, energy 6%. So, you know, that's I like the little bit more industrial exposure, but I guess the ONEV has something similar there in its exposure. I'm just going to skew smaller. I'll take MDY because I want, over the long term, smaller cap companies tend to outperform. Now, higher risk, but he's going down the market cap spectrum, and he probably has plenty of large cap exposure. So I'm going to go with MDY over ONEV. I didn't look at the expense ratio. It looks like ONEV is 20 basis points. MDY is, trying to pull that up.
Like 24.
24, okay. I don't know. What would you go with? This is a tough one.
I mean, for me, it's pretty simple. ONEV is 63% large caps and MDY is 86% mid caps. And so if you're trying to get a mid cap exposure, like the caller said, you're trying to get that mid cap asset class. Mm-hmm. Only one of these funds is predominantly mid caps. So I would have to go with MDY. It doesn't mean it's the best mid cap fund. We all know how I feel about how the S&P constructs things. But certainly of the two, it's the only one that really is a mid cap fund.
Yeah, I remember it, once you start venturing outside of large cap, the whole indexing idea doesn't work nearly as well as on those large cap names. Active management starts to become, depending on you know what you're talking about, becoming more attractive, especially if you look at bonds, for example. Most actively managed bond funds are going to outperform the aggregate bond index. That's just what the statistics say. So same with, you know, mid cap, it's a little bit more muddled. Same with small cap, but definitely you could probably find a better mid cap fund than MDY. Thanks for the call. Now let's touch a bit on let's talk about the housing market. That was the news that came out today. Existing home sales unexpectedly fell in April. And this is following the National Association of Realtors report on Wednesday that showed that inventory increased last month to a 2.5-year high. Now, a lot of people are going to look at that. It's, oh, inventory is at a 2.5-year high. Housing market's falling apart. No. And you're going to see YouTube videos and people on Twitter and all over social media talking about how bad the housing market is and how it's all going to crash and come crumbling down. But once again, if you look at the numbers, things are weakening, sure, but not in a dramatic way. Home building grew at its fastest pace in more than 3 years in the first quarter. And overall home sales slipped to 1.9% or 1.9% last month. And forecasted home resellers it was forecasted to be at 4.21 million units, came in at 4.14 million units. So a slight miss. All four regions fell, and housing starts are falling. Home builder confidence did deteriorate a little bit. But Luke, supply remains pretty low, right?
Yeah, supply does remain low. I think it goes back to what you and I said in a different webinar. I know I'm plugging a lot of webinars today, but that is essentially that in the wake of 2008, we never got back to where we were. And so we've been feeling the pain of that within the housing market for the past decade. And it's really coming to a head now, especially as mortgage rates are climbing. And actually, I saw today that I think the investor or the home buyer expectation is that mortgage rates are going to move up, that it's going to go up to, what, 9% within the next year. That's the average of expectations. So sentiment's certainly not good for buyers. While I will say a positive here is that first-time home buyers made up a third of the sales, which is the highest proportion since January of 2021, still pretty far below what's considered to be a healthy and robust market, but could be heading in the right direction. I think Overall, you have a two-pronged issue here. It's too expensive to buy existing homes, and there aren't a lot of homes, and we're not building a lot of homes. So I guess three prongs. So it's in flux. It's very dynamic. There's nothing to be worried about. I don't think anything's collapsing. But given the multifaceted nature of the issue, a lot has to change in order for there to be some price relief from the buyer side.
And you might see headlines like supply jumped 16.3% year over year, and that's certainly true. But that's up to 1.21 million units. But remember, pre-pandemic, there was 1.8 million units. And was that housing market crashing? No. So we have a third less units for sale than we did pre-pandemic. And properties are staying on market for an average of only 26 days. Now that's up from 22 days, but 26 days is not a calamity, okay? Now, there is a rise in inventory of million-dollar plus homes. That was up 34% year over year. So that's probably where the most weakness is coming from. And at the current pace of inventory and sales, we're at 3.5 months of inventory. A normal healthy market is between 4 and 7. So we're starting to approach that healthy market. But you don't, until you get above 7, that's when things start to really be a problem. And suddenly there are a lot of sales, there's a lot of foreclosures, and that's when you can get housing prices dropping in a dramatic fashion. But we're not anywhere close to that at the current time. Now, let's grab another caller question from our YouTube channel, and it says, Ryan Ketza says, can you do a breakdown of Illinois Toolworks, ITW, looking for a reliable dividend grower for my Roth? Now, this is a name that's been around a long time, and it's kind of a serial buyer of companies. It's an industrial name. It has a ton of small little machine shops and companies throughout the country, and they manufacture plastic, metals, fasteners, fastening tools for construction, automotive, appliance market, etc. It's just a well-run business that they have a machine, I guess, pun intended. And that machine works, okay? And this is one of the names that I always have on my watch list. We've owned it at certain points throughout the years. It is weakening technically, so that worries me just a bit. But definitely a name that you should have on your watch list. Return on equity right now, 100%. Literally 100%. Return on invested capital, 27%. So it's a very, very profitable name. But technicals are weakening, Luke. What are you seeing on valuation?
Yeah, from a valuation perspective, it's trading at a price to book of 24, which is pretty expensive, as well as a forward-looking price to earnings of 23.8. And so over the past 5 years, its annualized growth rate is about 2%. But, you know, the commenter did mention they're looking for a dividend grower, and this certainly is that. In 2018, they paid out $3.56 a share, and that has steadily increased to $5.42 a share last year, now projected to be $5.67 a share this year. So if that's what you're looking for a dividend grower, this seems to be a very well-run, consistently run business, cash flow improving, profitability stable, all of those things. But I think it's a little bit expensive right now. So I wouldn't add it right now. I would certainly watch it, but it seems to be a little bit expensive.
Yeah, and price to free cash flow now is around 25, and that's well down from its peak back in February of last year when it was at 38. That was very expensive. Now it's at 25, but it doesn't historically get cheap until that's around 20, high teens, around 20. So I think there's still about a 20% drop from here until I would get excited about it. If it dips back below $200 per share, that's when I would pick up Illinois Toolworks. Now let's squeeze in another caller question. You know the number, it's 888-99-CHART.
Hey guys, this is Steven in Lubbock. I had a question for you. A friend of mine was telling me about a thing called a Delaware Statutory Trust, or a DST. The quick way he explained it to me was it would be a way to do a 1031 exchange if you were selling land, and you would sell it into this trust, and it would be held there for 2 years where you wouldn't get as much interest, but after 2 years, it gets flipped into a fund. That sounded more like a fund of different properties and stocks that you could then transfer out of, like you would be able to sell, you know, stocks and different funds. I didn't know if you guys had ever heard anything of that, or if that's something you've dealt with. It seemed intriguing for a tax advantage on a real estate sale. So if you guys had any knowledge of it, I'd appreciate it. Thank you. Bye.
Now, there are two forms of DSTs, called DST, that can help you defer taxes on real estate and other types of assets. Now, a Delaware statutory trust, that is just for real estate, okay? And it's basically taking that money and investing it into a REIT. The issue is that they're private REITs, and you don't know exactly. Now they are different than REITs in some way, but for all intents and purposes, they're like a REIT. And like most REITs or private investments, you don't have a lot of clarity of what they are. There's a lot of fees there. And so I don't love it because of that. I want to know what I'm investing in and who the managers are and how everything's going. And you don't really get that with the Deferred Delaware Statutory Trust. Now, the minimum for those are about $100,000. So the minimums are pretty low. But if you have $1 million or more in deferred gains that you want to defer, I would go with more of what is called a deferred sales trust. Same acronym, DST, but you can now invest in whatever you want. You can buy public REITs, you can buy stocks, you can buy bonds, you can buy treasuries, you can buy basically whatever you want. And that is a much, much, much better way to go. Now, they both have pros and cons, but if you are above the $1 million or more in, you know, net proceeds, I would go with a deferred sales trust over a DST. Thanks for the call. Now, if you're a serious investor looking to improve your investing skills, I have some great news for you. Luke and I are hosting a webinar coming up in 3 weeks, yesterday, actually. And it is on June 11th from 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific time, covering dividends and quality investing, digging deeper than those dividends. Okay, so we're going to look at the importance of fundamentals like profitability and balance sheet strength when you are analyzing a dividend payer, how high dividend payers compare to their peers, and certain qualitative, when I say qualitative, meaning non-numbers-based factors to help you avoid value traps and develop the ability to identify genuine opportunities. This will be free, and it's an all-new InvestTalk Wealth webinar where you can gain valuable investing insights from 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific time on June 11th. Once again, quality investing, digging deeper than dividends. It's free to attend, but you must pre-register. Now we're moving into our final break, but the phone lines are open waiting for you to call at 888-99-CHART.
Two portfolios are alike, and every investor has a unique set of circumstances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hello, my name is Robert from Millbury. I have a question about stock CRM, Salesforce. I noticed that's been pretty high as of late, and kind of was thinking about adding a small position into this to have some portion of my portfolio be into the tech sector without being into, you know, the big companies out there, but I don't see really an opportunity to come in. So I just wanted to get your thoughts about what would be your thoughts about getting into the stock at this time, or what would be an ideal opportune time, like what price that would look like. Thank you for your time.
Are looking at Salesforce CRM. This is the preeminent cloud computing name. You know, they're kind of the first one to really leverage the cloud in a big, big way. They are the leader in client relationship management software, CRM. That's why the symbol is CRM, if you are unaware. Small dividend payer here, no debt, which obviously we like, but trading at a pretty hefty multiple, Luke. You know, the chart looks fine, not amazing, but fine. What are you seeing on the valuation front?
Well, cash flow is up from about $4 billion in 2019 to about $10 billion last year, pretty significant improvement. Profitability has also been improving as well over the past year. You know, it is expensive. It's trading at 27 times forward-looking price to earnings, but it's at a 4.6 price to book value. Its five-year average is 4.7. Its average on that price to earnings is 44.6. Like you mentioned, technically, it looks fine. Its sales growth is pretty good, actually. They went from $31 billion in 2022 to $34 billion. Over the past 5 years, they've annualized at 21.3%. In terms of tech names, you know, it's not egregiously overvalued, in my opinion. I think that it is a consistent business. Like you said, the benefit of being first to something is you get the ticker CRM. And I'm seeing a lot of things I like the improving cash flow and the improving profitability and very low debt. This is a tough one because I tend to stay away from names within the tech space that have high forward-looking price to earnings. But again, the price of book is pretty reasonable. What are your thoughts?
Well, it did recently make an all-time high, but has come off that. So it was a bit of a double top from the 2021 high, around $315 per share. Now it's come off to about $283, and kind of consolidating. So it is consolidating bearishly, at least in the near term. So I would worry a bit about that. The good thing is, like you said, they have good earnings growth, and the last four quarters. Each of the last four quarters, revenue growth was up 11%. And it's almost like, can they control that? And, you know, there's the reason that that investors like these type of companies is because their business is very predictable. You can know what their churn rate is. Churn rate doesn't move dramatically from month to month. It might move over an extended period of time, but typically that's because of competitors or there's, you know, just the management kind of falls off. But Salesforce has good management. And, you know, if they have low churn rate and they can continue to raise their prices over time, that's going to allow them to expand their profitability. And that's what you've seen. So I would keep it on my watch list. I would wait for the technicals to improve a bit more because I'm not liking what I'm seeing, at least in the near term. I'll give you a number where there'd be major support. And that is going to be right around 245. At 245, in that range, 240, 245, that's where I'd be thinking about picking up Salesforce CRM. Now, lastly, Luke, let's talk a bit about the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. They are cracking down on the buy now and pay later companies like Affirm, Klarna, and Afterpay, treating them more like credit card companies. Will this have an impact on the industry, do you think?
Well, I think one of the problems here is that they don't address the fact that you don't have to look at the credit worthiness of the borrower. So from a systematic issue, they didn't really do much solving there. But, you know, I think you can look at this two ways. One way is the industry is behind it, which is good. It'll mean it'll be implemented. The other way is the industry is behind it. So is it aggressive enough? So yeah. I think there's still a lot to be seen here, but certainly moving in the direction of keeping the market safer is always better.
I think it protects the consumer a bit more, but it does not protect the actual lender from doing stupid things. And we all know, in the finance industry, especially new companies that haven't been around a while, that haven't been through cycles, they tend to do stupid things and then the cycle turns and suddenly they have problems. So that's what I expect to happen in the buy now, pay later space. Well, I'm Justin Klein with Luke Guerrero, and we completed another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play, and be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. And head over to YouTube and check out us in video form to search Invest Talk with two T's. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights